distributing co-op that matches at the end of the day, a restaurant has food left over and there's a homeless shelter. So they send out all these messages to say, we need somebody to take pick up the UDF at this location, take it to the soup kitchen at this location, and people volunteer to do it. And I signed up for that a year or two ago. I signed up for it before I got this job, and I never did it. And I think I might give that a try.
Cool.
Because it's totally flexible. You can take a route, you can not take a route, whenever you want to do it, whenever you don't want to do it. So yeah. I'll do some stuff like that.
Nice. My uncle on my mom's side, I don't think you've met him, but he owned a bread route.
Yeah.
For 20, 25 years, I think. Drove it every morning, delivering.
In Dayton?
No, this was in Illinois.
Okay.
Up near Chicago.
Bread.
Yeah, so Pepperidge Farms.
Like from store to store? He didn't deliver to people's houses.
No, just, yeah, different supermarkets.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yeah, so he retired or sold his route probably 8 weeks ago.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. How old is he?
He's, I think, about to turn 60. He might be 57,
58. Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, like, when we would go visit him, he was up at 3 in the morning and away from the house, and then would go to bed at, like, you know, 6 p.m. to have enough time.
It's a rough life.
Enough sleep, yeah. Yeah, but we're just, so this class, entrepreneurial marketing.
Yeah.
It's basically about, when setting up a business, how can you put yourself out there in your community, build relationships,
right,
and then, you know, start your own business and be successful with it.
Yeah,
the purpose of this interview is just to understand your background about your career before you started your own business.
Okay.
And then what led you to start your own business.
Yeah.
And, you know, healthcare specifically, why that was of interest to you. So I've got some questions written up that we can
just go through. Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to introduce yourself first? And
yeah, I'm Jay Rom. I'm a soon to be retiring accountant with a healthcare background for many, many years of healthcare. Had a couple years of utility experience, but then I went into healthcare, and I've been in healthcare for, gosh, 35 years. Several different avenues of healthcare, from facilities like surgery centers to physician practices, to HMOs. So healthcare has been pretty much my life.
Okay. And you started out, you went to Wright State.
I went to Wright State, yeah.
And then you did an MBA at Xavier.
Right.
Okay. And then during that time, you were working for, you were an employee for the utility company?
Yeah, I came out of school. I had an accounting degree, but I knew I didn't want to be an accountant. So that's, I didn't really like it, but I knew it was a good background. So I got the degree, and I went into, at the time, you either went into, like, Big Eight accounting, like Arthur Anderson and Deloitte Haskins and Sells, or whatever they were at the time. They're totally different now. But you either went the public accounting route and really did accounting, or I went into internal auditing, which was a department within a company like the utility company, and we did audits for the company themselves, not necessarily financial audits, but operational audits. How's this working? How's that doing? And that attracted me. It was more operational. And that was more fun to me than doing numbers. So I took the job with the utility company. I was there for 6 years, and I was progressing. I was getting ready to be named the manager of the audit department. But I realized, and I was young and eager, I wanted to run the world. When you looked over the executive suite, the floor with the executives in it, they were all engineers with MBAs, because utility is very engineering oriented, obviously. So, and they had one token accountant who was an accountant with CPA who did all the numbers, and I didn't want to do that. So I figured my future, I wasn't going to run the company with my background, because when you have an engineer with an MBA, they're much more valuable to a utility company than a financial guy with an MBA. So I got an opportunity to, a friend of mine called me who, she had left the utility company to go work for an HMO in Dayton, Ohio. She was like in IT. And she called me and she said that they were looking for an internal audit manager. Small department, there's only two people. So it was a lateral move, but I decided to take it and get into healthcare. So I went to work for an HMO. And that's when I was working for the HMO, that's when I was getting my MBA.
Okay.
And one of the things about my MBA that I really enjoyed was I had been out of the world for 4 or 5 or 6 years. And it's different than an undergraduate degree when you don't have any idea what you're doing. You know, you don't really know about the world. You're just learning and you're trying to absorb it.
Sure.
But after you've been out in the world for a few years and you see what it's really like, you take much more interest in your classes and you learn a lot more in the MBA program, I think, than you do in the undergraduate program.
Yeah. And what's an HMO?
Oh, sorry. It's a health maintenance organization. It's like a United Healthcare.
Okay. What was what were your the prior experience that you had in accounting and in auditing? Do you see those skills or were those skills valuable
when very valuable. One of the things I've always, this is one of the first things I learned when I was at the utility company, and it stuck with me my whole career. And that is, we had to do an audit of an area. Might be 200 man hours to do the audit, to tick and tie all the numbers and make sure they agreed, and to look at the operations, make sure it's up to speed. Regardless of how many hours that we took to do the audit, we had to write a one-page audit report. And it had to, within the first sentence, it had to say what the report was all about, and then the details below it, but it couldn't go over one page because we weren't going to get any more attention than one page.
Mm-hmm.
So to this day, if I send out a group email to a group of doctors or whatever, I say the purpose of this email is to blank. Now, here's how I did it. Here's what it did. I keep it short and sweet, but within the first sentence of the paragraph of the email, you get a gist for what it's all about. And that stuck with me. I don't know. It was just I don't think every internal audit department does that, but it was just the nature of the executive suite at the utility company. They didn't want a long report.
Yeah.
If they wanted a long report, they'd ask for it. So that's one of the things that stuck with me for my whole career is be succinct and be clear and provide information right up front so people know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Concise and
and clear and short.
Okay.
You can always expand it, but you can't make it more concise.
Right. Okay. And then when you started your first business, was that directly after the HMO? Was that your first transition?
So when I went to work for the HMO, I was the audit manager, and the audit manager has to report to a committee of the board of directors, the audit committee, because they have to be independent from management. So the audit department is independent. So the board of directors on the audit committee, Jeff Leland was on the board. He was on the committee, and I met him, and I've worked with him for the last 50 years. So I met him at the HMO and really struck it up with him and liked his style, and he was very, very, very entrepreneurial. He'd done several things. He's 15 years older than I am, so he'd already done plenty of things in his career. He was very successful. And when it was actually the HMO sold Western Ohio Healthcare, it was in Dayton, Ohio only. They sold to United Healthcare. United Healthcare came in and they said, we want you to work for us, but we want you to work for us in Minnesota.
Mm.
And so I went to Minnesota, I looked at the area, I looked at the job, and Jeff Leland, who I met on the audit committee, he was going to start up a primary care practice, a capitated primary care practice, which is a totally different reimbursement model. And he was going to contract with United Healthcare. And he said to me, he said, how would you like to help me do that? And I said, how do you do that? He goes, I don't have any idea. But Jeff is the type of person who's going to be successful at whatever he does. He may start out making jelly and end up making eggs, but he's going to come out smelling like a rose. And he's just that type of a person. He can see around corners. I always joke around that he could meet with the president of GM for an hour, and the president of GM would learn something. Whatever it was, you know, why do you put the tires on the bottom of the car, not the top of the car? Well, because the road's on the bottom of the car. Well, put the road on the top of the car. You know, he was very entrepreneurial and thought, would think of crazy things.
Creative.
Very creative. And I'm not. So, but I'm an executor. So I'm able to take his ideas and kind of hone him in, kind of bring him. We had a relationship where he would say, you know, what do you think about painting the wall blue? And I said, well, blue's a little rough. You know, why don't we go with a light pink or, you know, whatever, I'm making that up. But I would kind of hone him in on keeping him focused, and we worked very well together. So he was going to go do something he didn't know how to do.
Yeah.
He wanted me to help him do it. I didn't know how to do it, but we both jumped into it with both feet and said, let's give it a try.
Okay. And so when you started your first business with Jeff,
yeah,
what was that a similar model to the HMO, or what was the idea behind it?
No, it was actually going to contract with the HMO. So the HMO sells different products. They sell PPO products where you can go to any provider you want. They sell HMO products where you have to go to their small list of providers that are in the HMO network. They wanted to form an even tighter network that you had to go to a primary care doctor for everything. And if you wanted to go to a referral, you couldn't go directly to a specialist. You had to go through your primary care doctor, kind of a gatekeeper model.
Okay.
So it was going to be a new product that was going to be managed by us. We were supposed to go out and hire the doctors and form the network and help the doctors manage the care. And they were going to be the gatekeeper for a new product that UnitedHealthcare was going to sell, like a 10% discount to their other products because it was going to be more managed.
Okay.
So I forgot you. What was your question?
Just the background, the idea behind the business, yeah, and how that came to fruition.
So we went out, we built a couple buildings in Dayton. They're still there today. In Huber Heights and in Centerville, we built these big medical office buildings that we hired doctors, and we had them focus on being the gatekeeper for the patient. So the patient had to call them for everything.
Okay.
And it was a different kind of healthcare where the patients didn't really like it because they felt like they were being controlled too much and they didn't like going through the primary care doctor for everything. But it was a model that was designed to be cheaper and more efficient for the HMO, and it was a new product for them.
Okay. So you were an authorized reseller of the package that UnitedHealthcare had?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then your business was getting patients to work with the primary care physicians?
Yeah.
And
we would contract. We'd go out and we'd talk to all the cardiologists in town. We'd pick one cardiology group to go to, and we'd negotiate with them, and we'd say, we're going to give you all of our business, and we need a better rate.
Mm.
So we'd ask for cheaper rates for them because we were giving them all of our business. And so we had a very tight network of doctors. Our doctors couldn't just refer to anybody.
Yeah.
They had to refer to the doctors that we contracted with.
Okay. Why? So it sounded like there wasn't a lot of freedom for the patients.
Right.
How did you navigate solving how did you navigate those patient relationships who would complain to you about, aren't letting me go anywhere?
It's interesting. So we wanted people to choose our product, and we were held accountable for the cost of our product. And so we wanted the healthiest people possible. So we would have tours of our buildings, and we'd meet all these potential patients. And they would say to us, who's your cardiologist? Because I go to a cardiologist. And we'd say, we're not going to tell you that. What do you mean we're not going to tell you that? We're not going to commit to being Dr. Jones because it might be Dr. Smith the next day. We will get you to the best cardiologist in town. So what ended up happening, and we were basically at risk so we were given a flat amount per patient regardless of how much we spent on them. So obviously we wanted the healthiest patients possible. So we would tell the patient, we're not going to tell them their specials list. So what would happen is that patient would not choose our product.
Mm.
And we ended up self-serving by getting only the patient. I don't care who your cardiologist is. I don't go to a cardiologist. I'll take your product. It's 10% cheaper.
Yeah.
So we ended up getting a healthier population, not by design, but it just turned out that way.
Yeah.
And it helped us save money in the long run. Now, it's a long story. We ended up closing down after 2 years because our owner, we were private equity backed, and they sold us to another insurance company, and that kind of killed the relationship with United. But that was we navigated it by telling the patients the truth, and by telling the patients the truth, we only got the patients that we really wanted, and we didn't maximize the size of our network, but we maximized the health of our network.
Okay, so did you going into this organization that you set up, did you anticipate the target patient population for you guys being the healthiest, who might not use all of the different primary care groups that you had agreed to, contract with?
Right.
Like, did you have an idea of, who you wanted to go after?
Well, we actually did. The model could have gone one of two ways. We could have gone out and hired doctors fresh out of school, or hired doctors and brought them in with no patients and started our practice from scratch.
Yeah.
We actually bought a very, very busy two brothers, primary care doctors in Dayton. We bought their practice.
Okay.
Because we figured that their patients would be more likely to switch into it would kind of kickstart the network.
Yeah.
Their patients would be more likely to pick our network. We bought a very, very busy pediatric practice of five or six doctors in Dayton that were pediatricians. We bought their practice. So our goal there was to jumpstart the people who would pick our product because they knew these doctors.
Okay.
And there were other people that were doing a similar model in other cities, like Philadelphia was doing a similar model under our same private equity company, but they did the model where they just hired a doctor in off the street with no patients, and they only had them see the patients that were new to the product.
Okay.
We kickstarted it a little faster.
So your strategy was, let's go out and get a successful practice already.
Right.
We'll acquire them and their patients.
Right.
And then the patients can steer the course of our business decisions.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Interesting. Yes. What were some of the challenges that you faced in starting that first business?
Well, we'd never done it before, so we didn't really know what we were doing. We were kind of putting a game plan together as we went along. We didn't have a roadmap. This had not been done. It was being done in two other cities at the same time, in Philadelphia and Chicago, but they'd never done it before either. So it was a lot of trial and error, and again, it was decisions that we made that we thought would kickstart the business. And but we learned that we didn't know, again, that the sick patients weren't going to choose us, so we had to we had to navigate that in a good way, but we didn't have a roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
So we were kind of making it up as we went along.
Okay.
And with two people who had never done this before.
So what was, why, you mentioned Jeff and how entrepreneurial he was.
Yeah.
Why did you guys settle on healthcare as the industry to start a business in?
Healthcare is totally messed up. I mean, we have the worst healthcare system. But I say that, but there, and everybody says, let's do universal care like France or like other countries, but they're not Canada. They're not successful either. I mean, there's no great model out there, but healthcare is so screwed up. There's so many opportunities. I mean, there's opportunities to down so many different roads that you either recognize or you will recognize as you get into it. And it was something that he and I were both, the industry we were in at the time, and we were most comfortable with it. And it was so screwed up that there was opportunities abound to try to help improve the quality and decrease the cost.
Okay. Hmm. What kind of, were you stressed when you started your first business?
I mean, you know, I'm the type of person that, because I've done this twice, or I've left a very successful job. Like when I left the HMO that was sold to UnitedHealthcare, they offered me a middle management job in Minneapolis, running the finance department for five or six HMOs, you know, kind of a corporate job.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you later when we talk later about what I did again when I left and joined Jeff again. I'm not the type of person that wants to know what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my career. If you're going to tell me this is your job for the rest of your career, you must put a gun to my head. It wasn't a difficult decision for me to take the job that was risky and unknown compared to the one that was stable and solid, because that's just the way I am and drive my wife crazy, but it's worked out a couple times.
Seems like it, yeah. Okay. So how did that first business, so you said you sold that to after 2 years?
Yeah, so what happened was we were private equity backed, and our private equity company hired as the CEO a former insurance executive from I think Metropolitan Insurance Company.
Uh-huh.
And there was Metropolitan, there was Travelers, and so anyway, the chairman of our board was from Metropolitan Insurance Company. Well, they sold the business to Travelers. To Metropolitan and Travelers took their healthcare businesses in the 1990s, and they formed a new company called MetroHealth. And by combining their, because Metropolitan and Travelers Insurance Company insure everything, health, houses, cars, health insurance, everything. But they took their health businesses and they consolidated in a company called MetroHealth. MetroHealth owned us then at the time. We were competing with UnitedHealthcare. So UnitedHealthcare said, well, we're not going to support you anymore. If you just signed up with a competitor, you're now owned by a competitor. We're not interested in having the new product with you anymore. So we shut it down.
Okay.
And we tried to get MetroHealth started in Dayton, but they didn't have enough foothold. So we ultimately sold the practice that we built. We ultimately sold to St. E's Hospital, because we had a group of doctors that were organized, but they didn't have any product to focus on. And St. E's Hospital had 50 some doctors that they employed, all in solo practices all across Dayton with no cohesion at all. So they came to us and they said, we want to buy your practice. And our buildings that we built in Huber Heights and Centerville were half empty because we hadn't filled them up yet. They had doctors all over the place. So they basically took me and they said, we want to make you our vice president of all the practices that we own. And we want you to consolidate our practices into your model and get us working together. And we've even got specialists that aren't working with our own primary care doctors. So get that. So I did that. And Jeff went out and Jeff left him to go do something else.
Okay.
And he ended up going out to start to work for a surgery center company out of Boston. And we'll get to the point where we later met back up. But so for a year or two, I was the vice president of the physician services for St. E's Hospital. And I was getting the doctors organized. We were doing a new model, and the hospital ultimately closed.
Mm.
So when the hospital closed, my job was to get rid of all the doctors. and help him set up in private practice or sell him to another practice or whatever. But that, and then I was out of a job.
Okay. And how long were you in that role, the VP role?
2 years, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was at the utility company for 6 years. No, 5 years. 1985 to 1990. Then 1991 to 1993. I don't know, about 2 years.
Okay.
But I'm getting the years mixed up. But.
Yeah, but, you know, general timeline. And then what happened after that?
One of the doctors that I knew from Dayton, actually had his main office in Cincinnati, and he said, he was a cardiologist, and he said, we're looking for a CEO. He said, you seem like you'd be a great person to be our CEO. And so I talked to the group, and I became the CEO of a 9-physician cardiology practice in Cincinnati at Good Sam Hospital. Okay. Well, actually, we went to all the hospitals, but Good Sam Hospital was our main hospital, but I became their CEO. And I was their CEO from 2000 to 2000. And so it must have taken us up to 2000 because I was the CEO of the cardiology group from 2000 to 2005.
Okay.
So I left and started and took that job. And Jeff was out doing something. Again, he went to work for a company building surgery centers. He was like their VP of development, stirring up business. And he came back to me, and about once a year we'd have lunch. And he said, this is what I'm doing. He said, we could do this, Jay. I don't need to work for this. We could set up our own company and do this. And I'd go home and tell Laurie that I had lunch with Jeff, and she'd say, oh, shit. I didn't have to say anything else except I had lunch with Jeff. And so over the next couple of years, we decided to build a company to do surgery centers because he was learning how to do surgery centers. I didn't know anything about it, but he said, we can do this, and I know a little bit more about it than I did before I left. And So I signed back up with him in 2005, and we started a company to do joint venture surgery centers.
Okay. So how do you define the product that you're putting together? Because you said the practice that you build is what someone would buy from you.
Right.
But do you see yourself as a service that you're providing to patients, or is your goal or your frame of mind for as the CEO of either the healthcare group that you were working, the VP group,
right,
where you were basically trying to keep resources in house or within a network, how do you see like the organization you're building and the product, I guess, is
well,
my question.
In that case we were trying to build a product that was both owned physician practices, made money off physician practices, and managed healthcare, and did a better job of managing healthcare than the system was doing. So we felt like we could cut out a lot of, as a altruistic view of the world, that we could cut out a lot of waste in the system and save people money, save the HMOs money, save the employer groups money, save the patients money. So we were building both a product and a group of doctors.
Okay.
We didn't have any idea what the end result was going to be. I mean, we were venture capital backed, so private equity backed, so we knew at some point we'd be sold to another company.
Yeah.
But at the time, we just envisioned we'd be sold to another company doing the same thing in bigger
I chunks
of it. We had no idea that we were going to run into a dead end and sell the company to the hospital.
Okay. So I've heard you, like we've talked previously about, I've heard you talk more about the physicians that you work with.
Right.
Because it seems like they're more in need of business help.
Yes.
In running the books, being profitable, so that they can provide their good service, good quality service to the patients encounter. So what are some of the, like, say that I'm a doctor and you're interested in like acquiring my private practice. What are some of the things that you would tell me in order to like entice me to like sign on as a physician with your network or with your practice?
Well, we tell them that we're supportive of the doctors in the first. We don't tell you what to do. We ask for your input. We help drive what's done, but we do it in a collegial manner, in a cooperative manner, because when you start getting adversarial with doctors and telling them what to do, it goes wrong in a hurry.
Yeah.
So you basically have to. And the worst group of doctors to be the CEO of is a group that doesn't want a CEO. If they've got doctors in the group that want to run the group, and you bring in a CEO, that you're destined to fail. But I've been lucky enough to choose jobs where they wanted a non-physician CEO, and they trusted me, and they valued my input. There's bees over there. And And I treated them with, I tried to help them drive their business without impacting how they practice patient care.
Okay.
Because, again, when we built that first network where we went out, we signed up specialists. One of the surprises was that the primary care doctor said, well, I care what specialists I send my patients to. I don't just send them to willy-nilly doctors. I mean, these are my patients I'm sending.
Mm-hmm.
I trust my mother and my father with this doctor. Now you're telling me I can't go to this doctor, I have to go to another doctor. So one of the things I learned in that project, that job, was that the physicians really, really do, 99 out of 100 doctors care first about private, they care more about quality of care than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they bitch about the money, and they're working harder for less money these days. But the bottom line is they knew early in their life they wanted to be a doctor, they wanted to help people, and that's their primary goal in life. And so as a leader of that group, we want to help them do what they do. Mm-hmm. But they do that. I don't have any idea what they do medically. I can bring them ideas and say, I talked to another group that's doing this radiology service, or would this help you or not help you, or do we have enough business to bring this in? Or, I help drive the business, but I don't drive the patient care.
Okay. Would you act on the physician's behalf in terms of trying to go out and get new patients to bring into your group? Or did you leave that up to physicians and word of mouth?
Well, we helped them. We would help. We would have somebody on our staff that would go out and talk to referring physician groups and actually bring our doctors with them.
Okay.
Set up a lunch meeting with a referring group and take our doctors and introduce them and try to get them to send business our way. But it's really a physician-to-physician relationship. I can't go out and tell a doctor to send patients to our doctors.
Yeah.
Doctors, I mean, MD to MD works, but if you're not an MD, you can't speak that way to an MD.
Okay. Okay. And so so Jeff had talked to you about setting up surgery centers because
right.
he had this background
right.
with the group in Boston.
Right.
So what was that? Would this be outside of the first business that you started? Was this the first time, like, going solo or
this was the first time that I really started something from absolute ground zero. I mean,
okay.
even when we started the primary care group, we had a contract and we had some support.
Yeah.
This was something we walked away from jobs and we had nothing.
Okay.
Now, Jeff was able to go out and get us some private equity money lined up, and so we lined up a private equity partner and met with them, and they funded us along the way. But we didn't have a copier. I mean, a copier.
Yeah.
I remember getting a copier sales guy to come into our office, and I'm sitting on a cardboard box. So we need a copier. We want to lease a copier from you. He goes, we can't, you have no history. You can't lease a copier. I said, you can't lease a copier. I said, if we don't pay it, come get it. We don't want a copier back.
Yeah.
So we had to pay cash. We had to pay $10,000 for a copier because we couldn't lease it. We didn't have any financial. I mean, we had $1 million in the bank from an equity partner. And I said, we got $1 million in the bank. Yeah, but you can burn through that quickly. I don't want my copier back. So we had to pay $10,000 for a copier. And we started from absolute ground zero. And there was nothing. No, we had a business plan that we put together because Jeff and I both knew the insurance world. So we knew that, and there were plenty of surgery centers. I mean, we were not the first surgery center company, but they were all focused on ENT, outpatient surgery, orthopedics, general surgery, GI, eyes. So they were all the big specialists that do quick and dirty surgeries. Well, we had backgrounds. We said we're going to do two things because we wanted to help the payers. We wanted to be attractive to the payers. So we said we're going to neurosurgery. We knew the Mayfield Group in Cincinnati, Ohio. Cincinnati, Ohio has a large neurosurgery group that's one of the top two or three in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Mayfield Surgery. And we knew that Jeff knew them really well. So they were doing a surgery center, and Jeff said, "Well, we'd like to be your partner and do the surgery center with you." And they said, "We don't want a partner. But if you want to do a consulting gig with us, we'll consult with you to do our surgery center." And so we consulted with them. We did their surgery center. But the point was we wanted to focus on spine, which was a surgery that was all inpatient at the time. And Mayfield was doing a surgery center, and they knew it was going to take them 2 years to do the surgery center. During that two-year time, they were transitioning inpatient cases to outpatient hospital. And by the time their surgery center was open, they were going to transition from hospital outpatient to their surgery center.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a long game plan. So, and we knew that spine surgery, nobody was doing spine surgery in a surgery center environment. And so we wanted to, and the payers, we thought we'd save the payers so much money that they'd love us. And the other thing that we wanted to do was we knew that children's hospitals were very, very expensive. So we wanted to focus on ENT and get cases out of children's hospitals because the payers would love us to get cases out of children's hospitals. So we said, we're going to focus on spine and ENT. We quickly learned that if you were an ENT doctor, that you weren't already in a surgery center. It's because you couldn't be in a surgery center. The Children's Hospital was paying your bills or had you wrapped around their middle finger or whatever. But you ENTs were already in surgery centers if they could be. So that part of the strategy failed. But the spine took off. I mean, we went and met with spine surgeons across the country, and we said we're going to open a spine surgery center, and we'd like you to partner with us. And they said, What do you expect us to do in an outpatient surgery center? We're inpatient. Mm-hmm. We said, well, we work with Mayfield, and they're doing it. And they sit straight up in their chairs. You're working with Mayfield? Yeah, we're working with Mayfield. Okay, well, we'll listen.
Wow.
So one of the best things, because we when we set the company up, kind of backtracking, we wanted to be equity partners in the surgery center. So most other surgery centers that were like us were 70-30 partnerships, where 70% was owned by the doctors and 30% was owned by the manager company. One of the things we said, we'll do 80-20. We'll do 80% to the doctors, 20% to us to differentiate ourselves. We'll do a lower management fee. And where was I going with that? And we'll do spine and I forgot my point.
You were talking about how the doctors didn't really... They were like, well, what can we do?
Oh, yeah, what can we do with you? So we said we wouldn't do any consulting gigs. Because once you do a consulting gig and then you go to the next group and you say, we want to be an equity partner, we want to own 20%, they say, well, we do a consulting gig. No, we don't do consulting gigs. Well, we're doing a consulting gig. So we knew that when we took a consulting gig, it was going to blow that line. but we ended up telling them, we said, we did a consulting gig with Mayfield, one of the best groups in the country.
Yeah.
But we're not doing any more.
Okay.
And we had enough attractive other parts to sell them on to doing the surgery center, but we did one of the best decisions we made was to do that consulting gig, even though we said we weren't going to do a consulting gig, because literally when you order equipment for a surgery center, it was all invented by Dr. Mayfield years ago, and so you ordered Mayfield's table, Mayfield equipment, it's all Mayfield branded stuff, and everybody knows Mayfield. So it kind of kickstarted our business, and we took off on the spine surgery center part, and we kind of abandoned the ENT surgery center part.
Okay. And what was the value add for spine patients and spine doctors for doing outpatient?
Well, doctors, operating in a hospital is a terrible thing. It's very inefficient. You might have an 8 o'clock case that gets bumped by trauma. I mean, it's not the hospital's fault. They have people coming overnight in trauma that bumps their schedule. And so if you have a surgery schedule at the hospital it might take you 8 hours to get four cases done because you're getting bumped and moved around. If you own your own surgery center, it's yours.
Mm-hmm.
And so we told the doctors you're going to gain three things. You're going to gain an annual return because we're going to be profitable and you're going to get a return on your investment. You're going to build an asset that's going to be worth something we could sell one day, and you're going to get time. And the time is going to, you do with it what you want. Eight surgeries in a day at your surgery center as opposed to 2 days at the hospital, you just gained a day. Mm-hmm. Do with it what you want. Spend it with your kids or open it up and see more office visits or do more surgery, but time is a precious commodity. We're going to give that to you. That was our selling point. And then we did that because if you have a choice between going to a hospital for anything or going to an outpatient freestanding surgery center where the parking is right up at the front door, the schedule is the schedule. There's no trauma coming in. There's no car wrecks. There's nothing that's going to bump your schedule. It's a much more efficient location, and the doctors control it. The hospital doesn't control it. The doctors, if they want Mayfield equipment, we get Mayfield equipment. If they want Medtronic equipment, we get Medtronic equipment. It's their surgery center, and we set it up for them to be successful.
Okay. Interesting. So you said that business took off pretty quick.
Yeah, not as quick as we wanted it to, but it was gaining ground. It was resonating with the doctors. They were a little bit hesitant, but you get the early adopters that take more risk, and we had three or four of those. We got surgery centers started, and then when you start being successful with it, it kind of builds upon itself, and you can refer to these three projects that you've done that are successful. Mm-hmm. They can talk to those doctors, find out that we're good people, and it kind of builds from there.
What were the did the physicians leave their positions at the hospitals to work for your?
They
surgery
were they were working for their own practices, but they were doing surgery in the hospital. So the way the doctors, most of the doctors are independent, or they used to be independent, where they had their own practice.
Yeah.
But they could do surgery wherever they wanted to, any hospital they wanted to. They weren't really owned by the hospital, but they did surgery there. They billed for their professional time to do the surgery, and the hospital billed for their facility.
Okay.
So we didn't, they didn't leave employment at the hospital, but they stopped doing all their cases there. And we knew from a spine surgery perspective, they couldn't bring all their cases because a lot of patients are too sick.
Yeah.
Or the surgery's too big. So they might only bring 25% of their cases. And so it wasn't really necessarily noticed by the hospital. So they kept doing cases at the hospital and the surgery center, but they made choices and they picked the healthy patients, the ones that could be done on an outpatient basis, and they brought them to the surgery center.
Did you ever have to interface between the hospital and the physician if the hospital found out that the physician was taking too many cases there?
Yeah.
What were those conversations like?
They didn't like it, but the payer supported it. I mean,
yeah.
Now, one of the things that they can do to the doctors is the doctors have block time. So they have, they'll say, well, you can have every Tuesday morning at OR3. And, that's okay. How are you? You can have every Tuesday morning at OR3, but they want you to fill it up. Well, if you start taking cases elsewhere and you're not filling it up, they'll take your OR time away.
Okay.
So we dealt more with hospitals that were upset with what was going on, and they threatened the doctors. They couldn't do anything to us.
Yeah.
Or they threatened the payer. They say you're letting them take all the easy patients away. We're going to start charging you more for the patients we do. So one of the things we expected, because Jeff and I both work for a payer, we expected to go into the payers and say, we got good news for you. We're building a spine surgery center in your town, and we can save you 40% over the hospital costs. And what they said was, we're not interested. And we said, well, what are you talking about? We're going to save you 40%. And look, you may save us 40%. You may save us $1 million a year. But the hospital's going to turn around, and they're going to notice that $1 million, and they're going to charge us for transplants or surgery services that only they can do. They're going to increase about $2 million a year because you took $1 million from them.
Yeah.
We'd rather overpay them than pay you guys. So that was one of the unexpected roadblocks we ran into.
Uh-huh.
Was the payers not wanting to give us a lower rate than the hospital.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so you were on this surgical group journey for basically, what, mid-2000s?
Started in 2005, and we sold the company in 2016. So 11 years.
And then you had a little time off.
Yeah, I had a little time off. I went to work for the company that we sold. We sold 11 surgery centers. We had like 16 of them. We sold 5 of them individually to one-off sales. And then we sold 11 of them to one company out of Kansas City. I went to work for them for what was going to be a year max to help transition our surgery centers into their model. And then I was going to go do something else, either something else within their organization or something else elsewhere.
Okay.
And as it turns out, after about 6 months, they were running into financial difficulties, and they said, we're going to offer you the opportunity to resign. And I had told all the doctors that we sold to the new company, I said, I'm going to be here with you. I'm going to help you with the transition. I didn't think that was done yet.
Yeah.
So I said, I can't face the doctors if I leave. So if you have to, so you do what you have to do, but I'm not resigning.
Yeah.
And the next phone call I got was a termination. but that was what I wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, I left 6 months earlier than I was planning to. And I was actually working on a job within their company to run the Florida region or something. But they decided they weren't going to decentralize because they were running into financial difficulties. So they called me and they said, we're not going to do Florida like we expected. We think you've done enough on your surgery centers. We want to give you the opportunity to resign. And I didn't do that. Mm. But then the doctors, I needed to save face with the doctors. Leaving was fine. I was totally okay with getting out of there because I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to leave on my own accord.
Okay. And what was you and Jeff's role, or how did you guys divide up the, leadership responsibilities between the two of you? For
Jeff was responsible for drumming up business. I mean, he really liked out wheeling and dealing and meet with doctors, and I was responsible for taking, when he got a group of doctors interested in a surgery center, we had another colleague, Beth Johnson, who was a nurse, who really knew what a surgery center was, because she'd been an OR nurse her whole life. But she and I would take it from there. He would get the business drummed up and get him excited, then we would come in and we'd put the project together and we'd make it happen.
Okay. So you were operational, finance focused?
Yeah.
Okay.
I put the business plan together, got the financing all set up. Beth did the construction of the surgery center, the equipment ordering, the supply ordering, the staffing. But I was kind of doing the business plan and the financial, setting up billing and all the financial operations.
Okay. So when you had, let's say like 5-6 years into this surgery center business where you have how many buildings at that time?
We had probably 12 or 13.
12. How big was your, I guess, call it front office team that you had?
We only had an office staff in Cincinnati of 5 people.
Okay.
Most of the staff was located at the surgery center, so the surgery center would have an administrator that reported to us. We had myself as the president, Jeff as running up business, Beth as the senior clinical person, and then like a person to oversee billing and a payer contracting, and that was it. Everything else was done at the surgery center level.
Pretty lean team.
Pretty lean, yeah. We'd have VP, for every time we added like 3 surgery centers, we'd add another vice president of operations who would be responsible for 3 surgery centers.
Okay.
And they could be located, they worked remotely, they could go, but they basically stayed in touch with their 3 surgery centers to make sure everything was going well.
Okay. When problems would arise within your team or conflicts,
right,
how would you handle that?
Within the team or within the surgery centers or both? Or
both.
We didn't have too many problems within the team. We had a person who became an alcoholic and was not showing up to board meetings, which didn't go well. I mean, we ended up terminating him.
Okay.
We tried to get him help, and he failed at the help, and so we terminated him. But we had such a tight-knit team that we self-selected. I mean, we knew everybody that joined our company, we knew from previous history. We'd worked with them before. So we didn't really have any problems within the team. If we had a problem at the surgery center with a doctor, with something, we were on a plane the next day down there to figure out what we needed to do.
Okay. And how did those conflicts at the surgery centers typically resolve? One question would be, was it usually physician-driven, or was it?
It was usually physician-driven. And, okay. And here's the, when you charge a management fee to a surgery center, it's a no-win situation, because we would charge 3% of the collections for our fee to manage the center. If everything's going well, what are we paying you for?
Mm-hmm.
If everything's going to hell in a handbasket, why aren't you doing your job?
Yeah.
So it's one or the other.
Yeah.
So it would be either something was a problem that we needed to fix, or the doctor wanted to bitch about the fact that they just paid us a 3% fee and they don't think they're getting anything for their money.
Okay. So typically monetarily driven.
Yeah, pretty much monetarily driven. Yeah.
What were the typical resolutions for those?
We just told him, you know, we stuck to our, we had a contract, and we said, I remember saying to a doctor in Portland, Oregon, he said, what do we pay you 3% of our management fee for? You are 20% owner, so you should do the management for your ownership share. We shouldn't be paying you anything. And I said, well, doctor, what was his name? He was an orthopedic. He was a real asshole. I said, why do you get paid $5,000 to do a carpal tunnel surgery? He says, I don't get paid $5,000 to do a carpal tunnel surgery. I get paid $1,000 to do a carpal tunnel surgery, and I get $4,000 for knowing how to do it. And I said, well, that's what we're doing. We may not seem like we're earning our money, but we know what we're doing, and because we know what we're doing, you're staying out of trouble.
Okay, interesting.
So we stuck to our guns, and we held true to the contract. We didn't give in to them. I mean,
yeah,
it was they chose us as.
Go in?
No, they're out there by my car.
Oh, all right. Thank you. Sorry.
Sorry.
Carry on.
Thank you. But one of the things I tell our kids, this is a life history, because Lori hasn't worked for a couple years, and one of the reasons why I was able to do what I do is because if we had a problem in a surgery center, I was on the plane the next day. I didn't have to worry about where the kids were. I didn't have to worry about whether they were sick or had a runny nose or they were in school. I didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
I was flexible enough to go to all their events, but I didn't have to worry about it. I just had to get there.
Yeah.
And so part of the benefit that I brought to the job was I was 24/7. I was 24/7 in it.
Yeah.
And there was nothing that needed to get in the way.
Okay. And then just to touch on, you said you guys self-selected, right? The lean staff that you already had.
Right.
Basically just referrals or people that knew other people who would be good for the role.
And we only had 5 or 6 people, so.
Yeah.
It was a small team.
What were the qualities that, like, you found attractive in an employee?
Smart. They knew what to do. They didn't need a lot of direction because we didn't have a lot of oversight either. I mean, if we needed somebody to do the payer contracting, we needed them to know payer contracting. We didn't have time to teach them.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to bring the skill with them that we were looking for, and they needed to be self-sufficient.
Okay.
And mature and good, you know, good track record.
Sure. Okay. All right. So you have been in healthcare for a long time. So what are the major pivots or industry changes that you've seen over your time in the industry, and were there any changes that you made specifically to the surgery center business in the span of, you know, 2005 to 2016 because of new technologies or new procedures?
We actually looked at two different, so we were partnered with neurosurgeons in our surgery centers, and there was a new product, a new service called radio surgery, I guess is what it was called, but it was a really new technology with laser care and tumors and lasers, and so we had these neuro, it wasn't our business model, but we had partnerships with doctors that were getting into there's something more to it, radio surgery. I'll think of it later, but so we said maybe there's a business there, and so we hired a neurosurgeon retired neurosurgeon to help us figure out whether the radio surgery was a good business or not. It turned out not to be. I mean, it turned out that the laws changed between when we started looking at it and when we got too far down the road that the physicians couldn't own it because it was new technology, and the law came out and said the physicians can't own it. So we shut that down. But this is one of the things that Jeff said to me after. Jeff will say this to this day. We never should have wasted time on radio surgery. And I'll say, I'm the type of person that when you make a decision, you know, you never second guess.
Yeah.
So he said, well, that was a bad decision. I said, Jeff, it was a great decision. Mm. We sat down, we thought about it, we gave it our honest look, we gave it our best shot. It didn't work out the way we wanted it to work out, but it was a great decision to try.
Yeah.
So that's how he and I look at it differently. But so we pivoted a couple times doing stuff like that that he thinks we should have done because they weren't successful. I think we should have done because, as I mentioned, sometimes you start out to make peanut butter and you end up making paint mix and...
Yeah.
You pivot into something that turned out to be very successful.
How did you keep up with like the changes in or the new technology that came out, the radio?
The doctors kept us abreast of it.
Okay, so the doctors were up to speed.
Yeah, the doctors were up to speed. And they said, okay, is there a business here? And we just listen and go do an evaluation of it.
In the moment when those new ideas were brought, was Jeff all for them?
Yeah, he was all for it. Yeah, he was more for them than I was. So that's where he and I worked well together because I could kind of rein him in. At one point, he came to me in my office and he said, Jay, we should do surgery centers that are just women's surgery centers, just OBGYN or whatever women's services, GI, whatever, just women.
Mm-hmm.
I said, Jeff, I think that's too narrow. First of all, OBGYN is not a good specialty for a surgery center. There's not enough surgery to be done. And second of all, I don't think women really care about coming to a surgery center. It's got men there too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a, you know, it's not a change that needs to be made.
Yeah.
So that's where he and I would work together, and I would kind of rein him in, but he was generally for it. But he knew he would come to my office. He'll tell you this if you asked him. He'd come stand in my doorway and he'd say, Jay, I want you to give some thought to a women's only surgery center. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Because he knew I'd sleep on it overnight. And I'd say, okay, Jeff, here's my thoughts.
Yeah.
But he'll tell you that today. He'll say Jay will take 24 hours and come back with a very well thought out answer, and it's either yes or no, or here's the reason to do it, here's the reason not to do it.
Yeah, that's interesting that like when those new ideas were brought, you were more reserved on them, and Jeff was for them. And then after everything shakes out, and you have the experience of implementing the changes or not,
right?
The less successful ones, Jeff was like, man, we never should have done that.
Right, right.
And you're like, it was fine.
Right, that's right. You're right. We changed positions.
Yeah.
Because once I supported it, I supported it. I mean, a bad decision doesn't mean you, something not working out doesn't mean it was a bad decision. It just means it didn't work out.
Yeah.
But you still could have made a good decision to try it.
Yeah. So you admire, or would it be fair to say that one of the things that you think makes a successful entrepreneur or a successful business is being able to adapt and adjust to the changes in the industry, try things out even if they don't work because they could be a home run?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's really key. And Jeff is the only person I've met that I would walk away from any job. Now he's 80 years old now, so this isn't going to happen anymore. I'm done. But I would walk away from any job to do anything. He could say we wanted to start a peanut butter company, and I'd go do it.
Yeah,
because he's going to come out smelling like roses. And we worked together two times. We never made millions of dollars. I mean, we didn't hit it rich. We did okay. We didn't hit it rich. But it was fun. I mean, I love doing it. I do it in a heartbeat, and I knew that we were going to come out not losing our shirts, but maybe not wearing a shirt.
Yeah. Interesting.
Not buying any new shirts, but not losing our shirt.
Yeah. All right. What kind of, so someone interested in entrepreneurship, what kind of formal education or specialized training would you recommend that they have?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's interesting because this is another argument that Jeff and I would have. He thought the best executives were people with history degrees or political science degrees or something that had absolutely nothing to do with the with the business. And I would have I would say the best business leaders are business leaders.
Mm.
He was probably more right than I, because if you look at Bill Gates and Dell and all those, you know, whatever the other guy's name is that does Tesla, they don't have any business degrees, you know. There's really no script to say go get this degree and be an entrepreneur. I mean, one of the things my sister, I got into accounting because my older sister had just finished her accounting degree, and she said, Jay, it's a great background to have. Whether you do it or not, ever do it or not, it's a great background to have. Because you understand the numbers, you understand the business.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, and it was the best decision I ever made. But I've always been the number two guy. I'm not the Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me, and I would never be the Jeff because I'm not creative enough to be Jeff. But I work well with Jeff's, and I hope, and I'm not a sourpuss. I don't turn everything down.
Yeah.
I can think about it from a business perspective and either come up with a conclusion that it's a good idea or a bad idea. And Jeff and I work really well together that way. But if somebody wants to be a Jeff, I just think you gotta have confidence in yourself, because you're selling ideas that nobody else has heard of or nobody else has done.
Yeah.
And if you're not confident in yourself, you're not gonna be successful.
Yeah.
But what background, what education they need, I'd hesitate to say, because Jeff's probably right. You can have a degree in anything. If you've got the right mindset, the mm-hmm. right creativity and focus and forethought, you can be successful.
But do you think that you could have, or Jeff could have done the surgery center by yourselves without each other?
No.
So some balance of the creativity and then the business background.
Yeah, if you're the creative guy, you have to have somebody who you trust and respect to be a little bit more honed in.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'll be pivoting every time. I would say to Jeff at times when he came up with an idea of a women's surgery center, I said, Jeff, our business plan was to do 30 surgery centers. We've done 15. Let's finish our 30 surgery centers. It's not that we've run out of options. They're still out there. Let's do them. Let's do what we set out to do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's not lose focus. Except on the radio surgery thing, I said, okay, let's lose focus. We're not going to do it. You're not going to do it, Jeff. I'm not going to do it. Let's get Dr. Roski, who we knew as a retired radio neurosurgeon. Let's have him take a look at it. I'll help him, but we're not going to distract ourselves from our business, which is to do 30 surgery centers, and we'll have somebody else go down the road of looking at this opportunity.
Yeah. Do you think it would have helped or hurt you to have a physician or surgeon as the third partner at the onset of the business? Do you think that would have hindered you?
We ended up having that with Mayfield.
Uh-huh.
Because as I mentioned, when we go meet with neurosurgeons across the country, we say we're working with Mayfield, they sit straight up in their chairs.
Yeah.
So doctors have to talk to, doctors only trust doctors. They don't trust administrators at all.
Uh-huh.
They don't trust hospital administrators because they leave all the time. They don't trust practice administrators because they leave all the time. A doctor sets his practice up and wants to retire out of his practice 30 or 40 years. They want commitment. They want longevity. And so if we hadn't had Mayfield, we would have had to have a doctor help us open the doors.
You would have had to.
We would have had a doctor, a well-known neurosurgeon or something that, and again, that would have been tough to do because there were no neurosurgeons doing outpatient surgery centers. They would have been listening to an old retired guy that is trying to tell the young guy we're going to move into the outpatient environment, not know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
But when we were able to say that we work with Mayfield, that was better than having any doctor on our team. We took a Mayfield doctor to a couple of our meetings.
Yeah.
We gave them some stock options or whatever. They come to our meetings and they say, they talk doctor to doctor. That's one of the things in this world. Doctors have to talk to doctors because they don't want to talk to non-doctors.
Yeah.
They don't have a respect level.
Interesting. Do you think there are other industries out there where you would have to have, maybe like law is a good example. Like lawyers would have to talk to lawyers, and you and Jeff could be there in the room, but in order for the business plan to make sense to a lawyer, it would have to be discussed by a lawyer.
They respect talking to doctors. I mean, there's not many degrees that take that much, that you come out of school at 35 or 40 years old because you put in that much training.
Yeah.
And I think they respect each other. They think they're better than each other because it's competitive and they want to be the best there is, so they're very competitive, but they respect when another doctor talks. I can't think of another example. Even lawyers talking to lawyers, I think a lawyer would listen to a business person if they knew what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Where a doctor may not.
Okay. All right. One last question. What advice would you give to someone interested in starting their own business?
Do it. I mean, if you're confident in the business plan, and, I mean, have a business plan. So know what you're focused.
Come on, let's get a treat.
Know what,
come on, Jeffrey.
I guess my advice would be have a business plan so you at least know what you're doing. You know, you can't just go out and say I'm going to start a business and try something and try this, try that. You need to have a business plan that's well thought out, and has, you know, financial models and team up with the right people. You know, again, in my position, if somebody asked me to start up a company, I wouldn't do it because I know that's not my skill set. My skill set is to help the person that's starting up the company because I don't have confidence in my ability to pivot when it's to see around corners.
Yeah.
And but I have my confidence in my ability to help people when they see around corners, tell them whether they're seeing the right thing or not.
I see.
But that's my niche.
Yeah. So being able to build a good team.
Yeah.
Oh, have a business sakes. Plan.
Yeah.
Financial models. Hell? Okay. Yeah.
Somebody must have just let him out, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so.
That's funny. All right, we're going in. We'll get out of here.
All right. Well, thanks, Jay. Appreciate it.
That was fun.
Yeah, that was good.